This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council, Gay Men's Health Centre, on Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Well show, brought to you live every Tuesday from midday. My name is Jessie and my co-hosts today are Carlos and Adam. Thanks to Gasmin for the morning show and thank you for the news. How are we today, boys?
Jessie, I know we're panelling together for the first time, but my name is Anthony, not Adam.
Oh, my God. No, I know that.
And I'm really well, really well.
I can't believe I said Adam. I just, you know, just a force of habit. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, just a small mistake to start with. Nothing biggie.
Well, I'm well on this gorgeous Melbourne sunny day.
I know, it's quite a nice weather, isn't it?
It's great.
Look, at Well, we talk about anything, any topics related to the GLBTI community. This includes sex, health and well-being.
Yeah, great. So, Anthony, can you tell listeners what we've got in store for them today?
I can. Today, in our new segment, we're going to talk about the latest findings of two major PrEP studies from the UK, as well as from France and Canada, which were presented at the Conference of Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. Try saying that after a few drinks, which was held in Washington last month. So, we've got some interesting outcomes that have come out of those presentations, and we'll talk about those later on. We've also got a special guest on the show today, Professor Gary Dowsett, who will be joining us shortly to talk about prostate cancer, as well as some of the research he's involved in that area.
Yeah, and so if you guys have any comments or questions during the show, please feel free to get in touch and get involved in the conversation with us. We have many ways in which you can get in touch. Carlos, please tell listeners the many ways that you can join in the conversation or even if you wanted to know about next week's show or just have a chat to us, feel free to.
For sure. Look, and as Tex will put it, we have a plethora of ways of,
of course,
getting in touch.
I love that word.
With us. You can like us via facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy. You can call on 1-300-JOY-949. Send us an email on air at joy.org.au. Send us an SMS 0427-JOY-949. Or even tweet us at wellwellwelljoy.
So there you go. No excuse for not getting involved. A couple of interesting topics coming up. We go to our first track. We're going to listen to The Look of Love by ABC. We'll be back after this.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. And you're here with Jessie, Anthony and Carlos. So we've just got a new segment at the moment that we've brought in again where we kind of discuss some recent research or a news article that we'd like to talk about. And as we mentioned before, we're going to bring up the two studies that were presented at the Conference of Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. Let's just say CROI for short, shall we?
That's better. That's easier.
It'll make it a lot easier. That was held in Washington last month. And they were talking about two PrEP studies that came out that have actually had a very significant impact on a lot of the work that we do.
Yeah, so I'll just clarify a little bit about PrEP. What is it? It's it stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. So it's the same antiretroviral drugs that people living with HIV use. In this case, Truvada is the one that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But on this occasion, we use it to prevent infections of HIV. So HIV-negative men take the antiretrovirals to avoid becoming positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the two studies that we used, one was called the PROUD study and one was the IPA-GAY study. So PROUD study was conducted in the UK and IPA-GAY study was conducted in both France and Canada, and both of them recruited gay and trans women. So what the PROUD study did was asked participants to take Truvada every day and the control group were not given Truvada or a placebo. And it was found that the rate of new HIV infections in the PrEP group were 1.3% per year and 8.9% in the control group.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's promising.
It is.
Jesse, did they say how long they had to take the PrEP for? You said they took it every day?
Yep, so they took it every day. I think in the PROUD study it was for a year. That's when they did the first set of studies. And then I think they might have continued after that, but I'm not 100% sure. But they definitely did it for long enough to get significant results.
But that takes us to the IPRGAY, which actually ask you to take the Truvada 24 hours before when you expected to have sex, and once you had sex, 2 days after. So, two doses after.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a sort of routine with taking the medication. It's you need to take it at a certain time, and then a certain time after exposure.
Yeah. Correct. So the difference between the PROUD and IPRGAY study was the PROUD asked you to take it every day, and the IPRGAY study asked the participants to take it just before they anticipated sex and just after. So the thing that this was good for was useful. It made adherence a lot easier, because that was one of the most difficult problems for people, was that, taking medication every day at the same time, it can get quite hard and,
it sounds like a big commitment.
It is a really
it?
Big commitment. Yeah. So with the study that asked them to take it intermittently when they're expected to possibly have a risky situation, it made adherence easier, and it was one of the main barriers, as well as reduce the cost of intervention and other side effects.
Well, that sounds pretty promising. And PrEP is quite a controversial medication, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Both studies were actually meant to be pilot studies for larger trials, but they've actually been both So statistically significant. Both studies showed an 86% reduction in HIV infections.
Mm. And of course, look, any kind of intervention that will mean a possible reduction on HIV infection rates, it's welcome.
Absolutely.
And as you said, it has been controversial in some groups of people. But
for us, it's a no-brainer, I think. I mean, that's the way I think about it. And I'm sort of new to the whole this area of sexual health. But, there are some groups that try and sort of stop these sorts of studies going ahead, isn't it?
I do understand some of their concerns. Mostly, they say it talks about increasing promiscuity and the fact that they're quite worried that of other infections, other STIs where Truvada doesn't prevent them and that condoms are needed. But at the end of the day, Truvada or PrEP has shown to be very effective in preventing HIV, which is an 86% reduction is massive, and we can't ignore it.
And the approach to PrEP is actually not abandoning condoms at all.
Of course.
Just one more tool that you have in your belt.
Yes. So, well, that's a really good point, isn't it? That it doesn't mean that you get rid of the condom altogether.
No.
It's just another preventative measure.
Exactly.
And, 87?
86%.
I mean, there's no controversy there as far as I'm concerned.
No, absolutely. And that's what we're also trying to bring across slowly when, we're working on it. It is controversial at the moment, but
yes,
I'm sure we'll get there eventually. These studies have been really supportive in going in that direction.
Are there any other studies of this sort going on anywhere else? Like, where is Australia with all of this? Do you know?
We have studies on PrEP going on at the moment.
Yeah, these two would have been the most significant. They would have been leading the pathway at the moment. As you know, PrEP is not readily available in Australia.
No.
So we're working on that.
Okay. Well, we're heading in the right direction.
We sure are.
This is Well, Well, Well. SMS 0427 JOY 949 or email onair@joy.org.au to have your say.
Hi, we are here today with Professor Gary Dowsett from La Trobe University, and he is going to be talking to us about some of the research he's working with. Welcome to Joy Radio. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Well, welcome, and we're really happy to have you here. Can you start by just telling us where you're working and some of the stuff that you're involved with?
Well, I work at the Australian Research Centre in Sex, Health and Society at La Trobe, which is known as ARCHES.
Yep.
It's kind of well known to the LGBTI community in Melbourne, because we do a lot of the LGBTI research on health that's done around Australia.
So, yes.
you've probably heard of lots of our studies.
Absolutely.
And it's quite a few of our people come and talk to you on Joy very often. So I'm working there.
Yep.
My current area of work, I've worked in HIV for a long, long time, but my current area of work is actually in men's sexual health, and specifically some projects at the moment on prostate cancer. And I'm particularly interested in what's happening to gay men with prostate cancer, or gay and bisexual men, although my current study is only on gay men.
Yeah.
Because it's an area of work which is becoming more prominent. We're starting to hear more about it, and it's one of the areas that suggests to me that we really need to broaden the gay men's health agenda to understand what's going on for the health of gay men in all sorts of areas.
Yeah.
We mainly focus on HIV and sexual health. And so that's why I started doing this work a number of years ago.
Okay, great.
So let's start with Prostate Cancer 101. What is it?
What is prostate cancer? Yeah. Well, it's a cancer, and there are many of them. But like most cancers, they're not always exactly the same. They're a bit hard to pin down. Yeah. But the prostate is a gland that sits below the bladder, and the urethra, which is the tube that runs from the bladder through, for in a man, through to his penis so that he can urinate, runs through the middle of the prostate. And the prostate is involved in producing seminal fluid so that when a man ejaculates during sex, sperm comes up from the testicles and goes through the seminal vesicles into the prostate and is mixed there and turns into a seminal fluid. There's a few other bits and pieces that go into the mix, but that's a fairly simple version of the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the prostate's quite involved in our sex lives as men. But because of its position near the bladder and surrounding the urethra, it can also have, as we get older, implications for men in relation to continence and urination. Because every man's prostate gets bigger as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's. So,
and how do you acquire prostate cancer?
Prostate cancer? Well, that's a really hard question too. There are a number of different theories here. There's some work going on genetics because there's a bit of a tendency for it to run in the men's side of family. Obviously, it's a men's disease, but to run in families to a certain extent. But that's not definitive at the moment. There's a fairly significant strand of research on inflammation and infections that might eventually lead to prostate cancer. So an inflammation triggers the body's immune response, the body fights it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's implicated in lots of cancers, but not really as a singular cause.
Yeah. What about, I guess in a way, if men were trying to, would there be any advice you'd give to men to try and take care of themselves in preventative ways?
Well, there's, to my knowledge, there is no way of preventing prostate cancer.
Okay.
There are ways of treating it and catching it early. There's a lot of material out there on the internet about good diet and all sorts of other things like that, but there's been no proof that you can actually go in and prevent prostate cancer. All diseases can be minimised in some ways by healthy bodies and good lifestyles, but the cancers are very unpredictable.
It is, yeah.
So it just happens, and it happens as men get older, although increasingly people are being diagnosed at younger ages, even in their late 30s, early 40s for some men. That's rare. Mm. The usual age is in 60s and 70s, but it is being diagnosed earlier.
Okay.
So that's prostate cancer is a significant issue for all men, but for gay men in particular, why is that a particular focus?
Well, that was the $64,000 question as to why I did my research, because what I discovered was that there was no information about the effects of prostate cancer on gay men when I started this work 7 years ago. All the academic literature would say, oh, and of course we would need to find out what happens for gay men here. We don't know really how much prostate cancer there is among gay-identified men because sexual orientation is not collected in the disease statistics for cancer notification. So we don't know whether gay men are more likely to get prostate cancer or less likely to get prostate cancer. Some studies go one way and some go the other.
Do you think gay men are more likely to get checked or screened for it, if we think about, I'm sort of leading towards stereotypes here, but if gay men are more sort of inclined to visit a doctor around sexual health related matters,
yeah,
are they more likely then to be able to access other types of screens for other health related
stuff?
You've
been reading my papers, haven't you?
No. I'm on the right track, am I?
You're on the right track. We actually, in one of the studies we did here at Archers, but it was an international online survey of men with prostate cancer, we produced the first significant clinical finding of difference between gay men and straight men. That was not evident in the literature before at all. And that is that gay men tend to be diagnosed earlier with lower grade cancers. younger and with lower grade cancers. Now, that's a cross-sectional sample and a global survey, so you can't, you know, that's just a general picture of what might be the case. But we think what might be going on is that because gay men are screening for sexual health issues more readily, HIV being the main reason that produces that, but other STIs, that their gay doctors in, or gay aware doctors or the gay men themselves might be requesting a screening test, which is called a PSA test or prostate specific antigen test, as part of a suite of tests. It's part of a blood test, so you can get it done at the same time as you're being checked for HIV or syphilis. And that could be the reason why the cancers are being picked up at a slightly younger age and a slightly lower grade cancer.
So do you think we should be encouraging just everyone in general to be really asking for the tests?
Another $64,000 question. National policy in Australia does not, in fact, encourage screening in the way that we do for breast cancer.
Okay.
And the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia, which is the major peak agency working in this area, their new set of guidelines also does not recommend universal screening, but they have a series of, an algorithm, a series of criteria, and if you meet these criteria, including one of them being having prostate cancer in the family, experiencing some kind of early symptoms, then they recommend a schedule of screening. But we don't do it as a national strategy in this country.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Well, thanks for that. Stay with us and we're going to listen to that.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. We're back with Professor Gary Dowsett. We actually have a question that has come in. Charlie from Footscray.
Good on you, Charlie.
He's got a question to Gary about, he's had a dad and a grandfather who's died from prostate cancer and would like to know whether there is a hereditary factor here.
Well, yes and no. There's research going on that indicates there may be some genetic links in families, but it's not proven absolutely at this point. However, one of the recommendations for going and getting a test is if there has been prostate cancer in the family at the same level as Charlie talks about. Mm-hmm. It's not the only criteria for recommending that. Age is one of them. You should be well and truly over 45 or 50. Your body mass index is another issue if you're overweight and at that age group with that history. So they have a series of ideas where they add them together. And if you've been experiencing any symptoms, particularly symptoms of getting up in the night to pee more frequently and maybe having some difficulty in peeing, the stream of urine may have some difficulties, some breaks in it. They're the beginnings of things. Any kind of blood in the urine or semen, there's lots of different things. The best thing to do if you've got one or two of these things and you're in that age group is go and see the GP. The GP's got the measures in place as to what's possible. The test can be available on Medicare. So it's one of those ones that just goes into the pathology costs and you can get a result. And the result comes back and it gives you a bit of a baseline marker. And then usually what happens is the doctors will take a regular baseline marker, maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, depending on what your risk signs might be to see if there's something there.
Okay.
Now, Gary, at the moment, in what research are you working on at the moment?
Well, I've got a couple of studies going at the moment. We're writing up this big international survey where we found these differences between gay and straight men and their experiences of prostate cancer. We're doing another study at the moment on gay men and their partners and their experiences of treatment of prostate cancer and the effects on people's sexual lives, because there are quite serious side effects from some of different cancer treatments. Mm-hmm. And the one I want to talk about today is a small add-on study, yep, which is about male partners of gay men who have experienced any kind of cancer. So moving away from prostate cancer, we're doing a small add-on study to see if we can talk to more partners who've gone through the experience of supporting their own partner with a cancer. Any cancer,
yep,
and we're right in the middle of that one right now.
What would you expect to find when talking to partners who are in a relationship with someone who has cancer? Is there something that you're looking for in particular?
Well, it's a couple of things. I mean, one of the interesting things about gay men in partners is, of course, gay men in male partnerships have a much more enhanced likelihood of experiencing prostate cancer in one or the other, uh-huh, or both,
right,
or other kinds of prostate diseases. There are other prostate diseases that aren't cancerous. Right. So
there's the gender.
Being in a male-male relationship, right, you don't double your chances, but you certainly increase your chances of experiencing something like, right, prostate cancer. I haven't seen figures, for example, on testicular cancer and that one, but I know that the one on prostate cancer. So that's one thing. The second thing is the medical literature talks about carers of people with cancer, and usually they're always talking about opposite-sex married partners. And that, and the literature and the health education materials are all built around that presumption. So even if they don't say wife,
right,
they say partner, you can read it and you can see that they're really thinking woman and man rather than anything else.
Sure.
And we got very interested a couple of years ago in was the literature, health promotion literature, speaking to gay men?
Right.
And we did a big report for the Prostate Cancer Foundation, which is available on their website. And they now have produced a very specific pack of health education materials for gay and bisexual men based on our research and their own work.
I think that's a really good point because unless, because mainstream, we you know, we live in a heteronormative world, so we tend, unless it's explicitly stated, gay men may not be able to identify with the certain findings or think that this is me, this is talking about my relationship.
And may feel left out.
Right.
I mean, for example, most men are in the workforce. 60% of women, or roughly thereabouts, are in the workforce. So you've got a likelihood that a married woman has a slightly larger likelihood of being home and being able to care for somebody than a man in a gay relationship who's most likely to be in the workforce. And yet the literature assumes that the carer is kind of there looking after the patient and, you know, harder.
Yes.
I think the other thing for us is that gay men's relationships are different. And so there's different kinds of partnerships. So when you're looking for a partner who's a carer or someone who's caring for someone, what are you asking for? You're not necessarily asking for a spouse.
Mm.
But there might be different kinds of relationships involved in caring for a gay man.
Right. It's a specific job description, that one, isn't it?
They're very specific. And we learned a lot of this from HIV, with the people who cared for people with HIV, a diverse range. And so it's the whole area of caring needs to be opened up.
Yeah, so just before we head off, I'd like to know, with regards to recruitment, are you having trouble trying to encourage men to participate?
The carers, yes, and we think it's, and the partners, yes, and we think it's because the notion of partner of someone in ill in the general health world out there is like the married partner.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes when gay men who've been partnering and supporting someone see something like an ad for a carer partner, not an HIV area, they go, oh, that's not me. You know, I'm actually not the husband of that person.
Yeah.
You know, I looked after them, but I was a best gay friend, you know, part of the sewing circle, a sister's group or something.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so it is hard to get people to know that they're the people we're looking for.
Mm, absolutely.
So if you find them, how can they actually contact you?
We have a project set up at the university. I can give you the number. The telephone number is 9479-8700 9479-8700. That's the switchboard at my centre, and you ask for either me or for Jen Dixon, who's helping me on this project.
And if people were to participate, what exactly would it entail?
It's an interview. It's a face-to-face interview for about an hour to an hour and a half. It's tape recorded, and we can either do it at our confidential interview room in the city. We have a campus in the city here in Melbourne, or at their home if they wish.
Okay, great. We'll be right back. This is Joy 94.9. This is Well on Joy 94.9. We've got another message in. It says, great discussion about prostate cancer is not talked about enough amongst men, and I would like to know how a guy should discuss getting a test with their doctor. Do you only get tested when you show symptoms, or is it like a pap smear checkup that a woman would get?
Good point. Good point.
It's not done as a regular test like a pap smear, so it's less likely that a doctor facing a male patient would offer that unless the patient requested it.
Yeah.
So, of course, if there's anything wrong with your waterworks or down below, you talk to your doctor about it. And your doctor would ask you some specific questions like, are you having trouble peeing? Is there any blood? Things like that.
Yeah.
And that's when they'd make some decisions based on your age and anything else. It's at that moment you might want to say, what about prostate cancer? I'm in my late 40s or in my late 50s, or my father had prostate cancer, and the doctor at that point might make a decision about whether to do a PSA test. The test is not for cancer, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not a cancer test. It's a test to see whether your prostate is particularly active
or
in
inflamed.
Ways that could be related to cancer.
Sure. So we really just want to encourage people to have a chat with their doctors.
Chat to your doctors.
Yeah.
And this is now a much more public item than it used to be. Such a hidden disease for a long time, much more hidden than breast cancer.
Yeah.
And it's getting on the agenda, and so I think doctors are more likely to respond to a prompt than they would have a few years ago.
There we go. Can you tell us about some of the other research that you're involved in?
Okay, well, apart from this the other partner study, the one I was talking about today, which is about all cancers, not just about prostate cancer, I'm also involved in a study based in Sydney at the University of Western Sydney, which has been looking at sexuality and relationship effects for gay and bisexual men this time. Okay. Australia-wide, my study's been Melbourne only, for prostate cancer. And I'm on another study in Vancouver in Canada, which is looking at quality of life measures for gay men who've experienced prostate cancer, how we might actually get a better, more specific measure that fits with gay men's lives as distinct from other people's lives. And a new study that's just starting up at the University of Minnesota, which is also looking at gay men and sexual recovery after prostate cancer. And I'm a consultant on that project as well. So we're getting some momentum now. You know, when I first started this a few years ago, there was only one other study in the world on gay men and prostate cancer. And now they're starting to spring up everywhere, which is really good.
Getting like, momentum.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like domino effect.
Well, yeah, knock them all over. I've always said that's a good way to do things.
So you mentioned one of those studies focused on sexual recovery.
Yes.
Are you so? Is prostate when one partner's living with prostate cancer? Does it have a major impact on the way they perform sexually?
It can. It depends on the treatment. There's different kinds of treatments for different stages of the disease, some of those treatments have a different effect on the patient partner, depending on the severity of the cancer and the length of treatments. It's quite a mixed bag. The main three treatments are a surgery to remove the prostate. The other one is radiation, where they basically... there's various kinds of that, but basically burn the cancer out. And one other kind of late treatment is a hormone replacement therapy treatment, withdrawing testosterone from the system because testosterone can fuel cancers.
Right.
And each of those has serious side effects for different men. So loss of erections, loss of capacity to ejaculate, surgery can leave with people with rectal or urinary incontinence. Not always. Not always 100% good, not always 100% bad. It depends on the skill of the surgeon, the length of time, you know.
I'm hearing all those sort of physical symptoms and complexities. I'm also thinking about sort of emotionally what that might be like for the individuals.
There are certainly high rates of depression and anxiety among men generally who've been treated for prostate cancer. There's no particular studies that I know of that have looked at gay men and prostate cancer, but we do know depression and anxiety is higher in the LGBTI community.
Yes.
Generally,
yes.
Although it reduces for gay men as they get older. So you've got a sort of a downward experience of depression among gay men as they get older, but this could be stimulated by prostate cancer. And if there's been a history of depression and anxiety before prostate cancer, there's a likelihood that that could come back and give someone a hard time. But recovery rates are getting much, much better from all of the treatments, and the treatments are moving very, very fast. But it is an invasive procedure at a very serious thing. It's not like you get out tomorrow and it's all back to normal. It's not. And that has effects on partners. It can have an effect on sex lives. It can have an effect on the emotional requirements of a partner to support you, which is why we're trying to get the partners to come and talk to us about not just prostate cancer, but all cancers that they've helped support.
Wow, interesting.
So let's remind people how to actually get in contact with you guys and participate on this research.
Great. So it's for partners who have had a partner of any kind. You might be a previous partner. It could be a current partner. You could be a caring group of partners of any kind of gay men with any kind of cancer. That's what we're looking for, the partners of those men. It's a 1 to 1.5 hour face-to-face interview. That's all that's required. They can ring my centre during business hours on 9479 8700. That's 9479 8700, and ask for me, Gary Dowsett, or ask for Jen Dixon, and she's working with me on this project.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for coming in. Really interesting to hear all of that. So keep up the good work with the research.
Absolutely. And we've had so many messages come in that we can't read all of them out, but they've been really interested in hearing this. So.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Well, well, well. Well, well, well. On Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. This is Jessie, and we're on Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. So just following the latest news from the CROI that we mentioned earlier, that was those results were efficacy results.
Yes.
VAC has initiated a petition to get PrEP approved in Australia. So we know that there are many Australians that want to access PrEP but can't. Access barriers may make it very difficult, so we urge you to sign the petition. We have a hashtag that is Approve PrEP Down Under. So if you wanted to go to this petition, you could just search that, Approve PrEP Down Under, or you can go to the bit.ly link that we shortened. So www.bit.ly/approve-prep-down-under.
And at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, we're actually screening a remastered version of the original Hypothetical by Geoffrey Robertson.
I love your accent, Carlos.
I know. I'm not putting
it's
it up.
It's cute.
Does Dracula have AIDS? That happens on Sunday, 22nd of March at 4 p.m. at Acme Cinema 1. The screening will be followed by a panel discussion, including Gary Altman, who was the original screening, as well as our CEO, Simon Ruth, and our Director of Health Promotion, Colin Batruni.
Well, does Dracula have AIDS? Interesting title.
It is. It's a remake of the previous one, so I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys, for a really interesting show.
Yeah, that's great. I think we do have one last announcement about the Women's Health
Conference. Oh, we do. Yes, we do.
We'll just tell you about that.
We do. Thank you for that, Jesse. Listeners, we have a conference, a women's conference coming. Sorry, it's a lesbian, bisexual and queer women's health conference, which is coming up on the 27th of March. It's a free event and it's going to be held at the Queen Victoria Women's Centre, 210 Lonsdale Street in Melbourne. That's an all-day event. It is for free. Get along there. And this conference will look at all issues that help to improve the health and well-being of lesbian, bisexual and queer women. So get along down there. You can check out the Victorian AIDS website if you want more information. So that's great. Just before we do wrap up, also I want to say hi to Murray, who celebrated his Bucks party at Mardi Gras this weekend, and hopefully he's recovered okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully he might be back next week.
I hope he's alive.
Indeed. So thank you again to Professor Gary Dowser, and thanks guys for sending in your messages. It's really nice to have a little interaction from our listeners. If you want to get in touch with us, you know how. There is a plethora of ways.
Plethora.
You can check out our Facebook page for a little bit more information about the prostate cancer research. And it was great to have this show with you.
And I just want to say to all gay men out there, if you have a family history when it comes to prostate cancer, you're over 45, you're overweight, you have some symptoms that can include blood and urine, remember to go have a chat with the doctor.
Do it. Get
checked. As Professor Gary Dossett said before, it can be covered by Medicare as well.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you have nothing to lose.
Yeah. Take good care of your house so you can have fun and party on the weekends.
Absolutely. Thank you for hanging out with us today, guys. This is Jesse, Anthony and Carlos, part of the Well, Well, Well team from Victorian AIDS Council. Take care, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.